Nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Lights out.
Back in the cornerback, just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football. Let's play some football.
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field like when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season. And they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there, good morning, welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you, digital managing editor of Mount Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa. That's J.R. Moore, that's Joe Gaither. We're going to have some fun today. It's Friday the 13th, so let's get into it.
It's your favorite day.
It is my favorite day. I'm going to... Got some Friday the 13th music coming your way here in just a little bit, JR. This is my favorite day. I'm going to go get a stereotypical Friday the 13th tattoo after the show today.
I was actually kidding, but I didn't know you were going to take that seriously. Okay.
It is. That seriously. Yeah, here's a permanent mark of your...
Give me your top 5 days between NFL draft, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare Before Christmas. That's not a day, is it?
Well, I mean, might as well be in my house. I think you got those pretty spot on. Yeah. And Christmas comes after that. I think you got the order right on that. That's my personality in a nutshell. I'm a simple creature. Let's get things started. I got to remind you again about the Academy Sports and Outdoors SEC Tournament Sweepstakes. Academy Sports and Outdoors is sending one lucky fan a $500 gift card to Academy and 4 tickets to the 2022 SEC Baseball Tournament taking place later this month in Hoover. All you got to do is head over to Tide109.com, find the article there, click on it, follow the links, enter in a little bit of information, simple stuff, and you will be entered to win that prize. $500 gift card to Academy Sports and Outdoors and 4 tickets to the 2022 SEC Baseball Tournament. You can also go to academy.com/sweeps, academy.com/sweeps. The sweepstakes ends May 19th, so don't delay. Take care of that immediately. It is it's one person per household kind of thing. You can't enter as many times as you want to. But be sure to get your entry in as soon as possible. Where we're going to start today is not so much a take or an analysis. I just want to make sure everybody is kind of up to date on the latest information concerning Jerry Jeudy. Because here's the thing. We were talking about this before the show, is when things like this happen, a guy gets arrested, it creates a stigma, whether or not like the guy even did much at all, right? And don't get me wrong, like what Jerry Jeudy did here was wrong. There's a reason he goes to jail and so on and so forth. But we're not that far removed from Henry Ruggs, right? Like we're far enough removed where, you know, we tend not to think about it all that much, but That is half of the rideouts now that have spent time in handcuffs. And that creates a stigma, right? Like there's, if you go through Twitter at all, like you see it from Georgia fans right now and not just Georgia fans, SEC fans in general, college football fans in general, that are giving Jerry Jeudy a much harder time than honestly he deserves, right? So if you head over to Tide109.com, Joe Gaither has done a fantastic job keeping you up to date on everything that has happened here. Jeudy was arrested on charges of second-degree criminal tampering along with a domestic violence enhancer. Basically, what has happened is Jeudy was controlling the property of his child's mother. And his child is only 1 month old. The mother and I assume the child were about to pack up and leave and head over to Virginia. Jeudy kept some belongings, including the mother's wallet, medical paperwork, and I believe the car seat as well, locked in his car. So she calls the cops. Cops come. They arrest Jeudy. He spends the night in jail. This morning, he is put in front of the judge, and the judge finds that there was no use of physical force. No prohibition on possession of firearms. Victim not asked, not asking for a no contact order. And the latest update, the victim has asked the judge to dismiss the case. Bond set for Jerry Jeudy was $1,500. So everything's kind of said and done, right? Like, it's a very simple process. It was a domestic violence that really didn't even have much violence behind it, right? Domestic dispute is the word there. It's a really simple kind of situation. And JR and I were kind of discussing before, like, why does Jeudy have to get arrested for this situation? I get the possession of property that doesn't belong to him.
It just kind of sounds like something that if it were to happen between me and my girlfriend or a regular Tuscaloosa couple that – it may not be something to where somebody would go to jail, but since it's an NFL player, some high,
right?
I don't know,
and
high profile
laws are different in different places. You know, we don't live in Colorado. You know, I haven't been on that side of the country in 20 years, right? Like, I don't know the laws over there, and I don't know how widespread these. Because I mean, my wife and I don't get the cops called on us for domestic disputes. You know what I mean? So I don't know much about it, but it is. To me, it is slightly bizarre that was the route that it had to go. But if the law is the law, and you held on to, if you're Jerry Jeudy, you held on to the law, or excuse me, onto the property that wasn't yours. This is the punishment for the law. You spend a night in jail. You see the judge. The judge says, okay, this is pretty cut and dry. You're out of here. The problem is we live in an age of social media where for several hours, all we knew was Jerry Jeudy was arrested. We didn't know what for. Then it's domestic dispute. Oh, okay. Well, now it's the stereotype NFL player domestic violence situation. And it progressed throughout the entire story of this kind of unfolding is like more and more of, no, Jeudy really is the stand-up guy that we all believe him to be. This is just a personal situation that's put out in the public simply because Jerry Jeudy is a famous football player who's really good at his job and is about to be even better at it with Russell Wilson in the house. But I will say, you know, good on Jeudy for at least staying calm and not feeding into the stereotype of the domestic violence. I mean, nobody should really have to be praised for doing the obvious thing and not putting their hands on a woman, but far too often that is the news. And I think for once, for the fact that this is just a simple domestic dispute and it doesn't lead to that, I think you can at least take solace in that and be like, hey, at least this isn't the worst news that we get all the time. And it's nowhere comparable to what happened with Henry Ruggs. And while that was a tragic, preventable accident, like that completely changed Henry Ruggs' life forever. So the whole thing where these other fan bases are trying to come at Judy and compare the rideouts and say, oh, wow, you got two of them, you're incarcerated, and yada, yada, yada. Like, it's not comparable. It's not. And again, you don't need to give high fives to guys that don't hit women. Like, that's a given. Like, just don't do it. But I'm glad that it, for once, we see a football player gets arrested, domestic is involved in the language, and it is just a simple, it's just a simple argument that the cops were involved in, and Judy had to be the one to handle his business there. Hopefully he continues to stay, hopefully into the future he is staying out of trouble, because, I mean, with Russell Wilson out there in Denver, like, his career is about to skyrocket. You know, Judy has not been quiet about the fact that Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater were not good for him. You know, he hasn't exactly put it out into words, but he says a lot with just single emojis on Twitter. He hasn't liked his time in Denver so far. The quarterbacks have been terrible, but now he's got Russell Wilson. Cortland Sutton is back. They got the Melvin Gordon, the running back, back. Offensive line is good. Like I said, when Russell was traded to the Broncos, that team instantly became a Super Bowl caliber team. And the AFC West is a hellacious division with a lot of talent in it. So this is prime time for Judy to take full advantage of what's before him and become a household name in the NFL for his play and not for all this other stuff, right? So hopefully things continue in that direction for him and all this can get put behind him. Let me tell you about Alabama Vintage, alabamavtg.com. It's where you can find all the stock online. Jerseys, hats, shoes, commemorative t-shirts, jackets, you name it, Charlie's got it for you, whether it's in crimson spirit from the early 1970s to the early Nick Saban era, just everyday vintage wear, and some other neat finds that you can get there. You can find them in store, 2210 University Boulevard, under the Crimson Awning across from City Hall in the heart of downtown T-Town, on Instagram at AlabamaVTG. Go check them out and find something that you're going to love as far as Alabama vintage apparel and items go. We'll take a break and come back. And I saw an interesting thought piece from Alex Scarborough, which he did a lot of detail on. And it concerns our guy Will Anderson and Bryce Young and the future of college athletes, particularly college football athletes, and their transition to the NFL. That next year on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Did you know not washing your hands after using the bathroom can increase the spread of hepatitis A? Washing your hands with soap and water, as well as getting vaccinated, is the best way to protect yourself if you are at risk of getting hepatitis A. One dose of the hepatitis A vaccine provides long-lasting protection in up to 95% of those who receive it. For more information on the hepatitis A outbreak in our state, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM. Sponsored by the Alabama Department of Public Health, the ABA, and this station.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partly to mostly sunny this afternoon. Just a small chance of a shower through the evening hours. The high today, 86. The low tonight, 64. Tomorrow, partially sunny. Any afternoon showers that form should be few and far between. The high, 85. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 80 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Happy Friday the 13th to you. Yes, that's a song about Friday the 13th, the Jason Voorhees music. Love it. Ice Nine Kills. Great band. Love them. There is a weird situation that can exist in college football and in the NFL. And I'm going to play some Mel Kiper sound for you here in just a minute and kind of put it in perspective. But you remember a couple years back, because this happens every once in a while, right? Like, Jadeveon Clowney, you should sit out your third season. And then we get to COVID, and players like Ja'Marr Chase do sit out. Michael Parsons do sit out. And those two end up becoming the rookies of the year in their respective positions last year. And it's an interesting kind of topic that has a lot of angles from the evolutions of college sports that can lead you to believe one way or the other what's going to happen. But I want to play this Mel Kiper sound from ESPN where he's talking about some of the top prospects in next year's NFL draft and pay attention to some of the names. Here's Mel Kiper on ESPN the other day talking about the top players in the 2023 NFL draft.
All right, Mel Kiper Jr., so the 2022 draft squarely in the books, but let's go ahead and look ahead like only you can. Tell us your top prospects for the 2023 draft right now.
It's going to be Will Anderson, Junior Lawrence at the top, defensive end, outside backer, pass rusher supreme from Alabama. He's going to be the guy. And then the quarterbacks are going to challenge. That's Bryce Young, his teammate at Alabama, and C.J. Stroud, quarterback, Ohio State. You got a big-time wide receiver, Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State as well, and a big-time defensive tackle, and Jalen Carter out of Georgia. But the story of this draft, the storyline, Laura, is going to be quarterbacks. It was 2 years ago, will be again this year. Tyler Van Dyke at Miami, Anthony Richardson, Florida, Will Levis, Kentucky. The list goes on and on and on. I think the over-under will be around 5.5, 6 when we get to late April 2023 for the NFL draft. It's going to be loaded with outstanding quarterbacks.
Cannot wait to see it, and I love the fact that Will Anderson, right at the top, even though he's not a quarterback, there's a lot to be excited about with that prospect.
Ignore the quarterback part. The first five names that Mel Kiper dropped, the first five names, Will Anderson, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Jalen Carter, were all sophomores last year. They're all true sophomores last year. All three are eligible for the draft for the first time this upcoming season. Will Anderson would have been the first overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft had he come out. Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud would have been the first quarterback selected in this draft, in this past draft, the 2022 NFL draft, had they been available to be selected. Jackson Smith and Jigba would have been a first-round pick. Jalen Carter probably would have been the first defensive lineman selected, even before Jordan Davis. That's not an edge rusher. I mean interior defensive lineman. Very real possibilities, all five of them. Now, we know that we have nothing to worry about any five of those players not playing this season. We know that that's just not going to happen. We know that with Will and Bryce, there's too much. You're not a bad character player if you sit out. You're not. Ja'Marr Chase, Micah Parsons, they're not lesser competitors because they sat out during the COVID season. Obviously. They came back and were absolutely dominant. Most of the guys that did sit out that COVID season and went in the first round have been pretty damn good in the NFL. But we know that with Will Anderson, Bryce Young, we got nothing to worry about there. We probably know for the most part with Alabama guys, we don't have anything to worry about there. C.J. Stroud, Jackson Smith and Jigba, they're not going to do that. Jalen Carter, he's not going to do that. But what about like the future of it? Are these players that are put in that position going to be more likely or less likely to make that decision to abstain from playing their third season of college football if they played their first two to such a degree that just after the second one, they would have already been a first-round pick? And I think you can look in a lot of different areas. And the first one that you're going to look at is NIL. And that's the curious part, right? If the NCAA crushes the aptitude of NIL, crushes its viability to allow players to get rich before they get rich, then the NCAA could very well shoot itself in the foot by kind of assisting these players with the forethought that, hey, sitting out might be in my best interest. Because right now, Bryce Young is valued at $3.1 million, according to On3's NIL projections, worth $3.1 million as a rising junior quarterback in the SEC. It's the highest of any football player in the country. That number should, in theory, only go up if he continues to play. And he is. That number will go up. It would stagnate if he didn't play. It would never drop. The only way it could drop is if the NCAA gets in the way in some manner, in the way that they seem to want to, with the attack on the boosters and the collectives and all those different types of things. If the NCAA got in the way, I think you could see a situation where a lot of these players maybe look and see, well, I've already made some money. I can afford to have somebody train me for the next year to get ready for the NFL. I'm already ready for the NFL from a talent perspective. What's there to lose? I've got the money to be able to afford that training and still take care of myself. The NCAA doesn't need me. And that's where you say, well, do you have the integrity to play with your team? Do you have the integrity to play for your team? Well, again, I point out to the fact that these guys are worried about themselves first and foremost, as most people are. Sure, selflessness, it's a good trait. The team mentality, it's a good trait. It is. I'm not dismissing that. But these guys come to Alabama so that they can go to the NFL for themselves. Right? Along the way, we win championships, we do things as a team, we create brotherhoods, yada, yada, yada. All that stuff is great. Not dismissing it. But we're here in Tuscaloosa for one purpose. And one purpose above the rest, I should say. It's many different purposes. Don't mean to generalize why guys decide to come play football at Alabama. So the want to win championships, the want to do things like win the Heisman Trophy, other goals that are smaller than the NFL that help boost the opportunity to go to the NFL, those types of things. The love of the game, just the want to be out there and to play football. Oftentimes those things will outweigh the benefits of sitting out. Because here's the thing with the NIL is these guys aren't going to lose money if they get hurt, right? That's one aspect of where NIL kind of helps in a great way to preserve these kids staying in school for that extra season and playing football, is because the worry of getting hurt and losing all that money is kind of shrunk just a tad bit, because you're already making money. You're already making a ridiculous amount of money. You haven't been withheld the opportunity to be compensated for the value that you've created for yourself. Is there an exponential difference between $3 million and the, what, $35 million that Bryce Young would get as a top three pick next year? Absolutely, of course. Nobody's dismissing that, but $3 million is still a ludicrous amount of money. Then you transition in. Does that change the bowl opt-outs? And I think that's a much more difficult question to answer, because bowl games tend not to matter. And if that's the case, is there enough incentive Because you don't lose money on the NIL for not playing in that game. You don't lose an opportunity to show more of what you can do. By the time bowl games run around, you are what you are. The tape is the tape, unless you've missed most of the season. That's a interesting situation all the way around. Does that change? Does that evolve? Does that ever get to the point where guys decide to maybe play in that bowl game instead? Or do we get to a point with NIL that they decide, oh, wow, this is even way less of a purpose for me? Because I know what some people are thinking right now is, well, think about the whoever the quarterback is, whether it's Nico Iamaleva or somebody else, that is the $8 million kid that's got that NIL deal that'll pay him $8 million by the time his junior season is over. When he walks into his junior season, after he's played his first 2 years, if he's ready to go into the NFL and he's already banked, what's two-thirds, $8 million, $6 million, $5 million, I don't know. If he's already banked whatever two-thirds of $8 million is, then what's the point of playing that other season? He's already got the advantage on the contract for the NIL deal, not to mention all of his other NIL deals. He's got one season to go. He's already a bona fide top 10 pick. Why would he play in that season? What's the benefit? What's the cost? Because while he's already pocketed $8 million, or nearabouts, if he gets hurt, might not be making $30 million as a top three pick, top five pick, top 10 pick. At what point does the NIL actually boost your willingness to play that third season? At what point does it kind of take away? And I think that's where we get to a point where, again, the NCAA can turn all of this on its head by either deciding to make this more prevalent, shutting things down in an effort for creating mass control for itself, or allowing the players to make decisions for themselves. And I will say, when you kind of come back on the other side of that, is I saw a tweet the other day that kind of had my gears turning, where it was, you know, in the NFL, when you got into free agency, you had at least a few years of experience under your belt before you tested free agency, right? And players can be traded, but you signed that contract because of the opportunity of being in the NFL. And you're happy to be wherever you are. And if you're not, you wait till your contract's over or you get traded, and then you go to a new team. And in college, we don't even necessarily have one-year contracts, right? The commitment of a national letter of intent holds no weight. So at some point, maybe the NCAA steps in and says, let's create something that holds weight. Let's create something that is in the vein of a contract. If we're already headed down a path of professionalism, and we all really don't like the way the transfer portal works right now, even if we're in favor of the idea behind it, then you're at the point of you got to make extreme decisions. And I'm not advocating for that. It's just a thought. I don't know if I like that idea. In fact, I don't think I do. But if you're the NCAA, you've got all these kinds of factors to weigh in. Right, it's not just the simple argument of, is NIL good or bad? Is the transfer portal good or bad? Should we expand or not expand the college football playoffs? These are all simple questions that have base opinion answers to them. But the extensions of these problems, well, what about the nature of bowl games if you expand the playoffs? What about the ability for players to opt out of their third season in lieu of playing so that they can get ready for the NFL? What about the transfer portal and the weight that it holds on both of those options? everything's got to kind of work in a symbiotic relationship. And how close to professional do you want to get? Because I can't imagine it's that close. But with every slight decision kind of gets you closer and closer to it. Interestingly, was listening to a portion of Josh Pate's show the other day. And he was talking about the way that college football would handle Nick Saban's retirement. It was a really good segment. And I talk about it enough. We all know that Josh Pate's not in favor of many of the changes that have come to college football, which is his opinion to have, right? I agree with it. I think that goes to show you. I find him incredibly entertaining and incredibly intelligent, and I don't agree with him on very many things. It's possible to do that in all walks of life, no matter what we're talking about. Anyway, he said something along the lines of, when Nick Saban retires, maybe we'll look at the world of college football and look at all the changes that we've made and said, oh, we made a lot of unnecessary changes just because of that one guy. And now that he's gone, now we have to kind of look at what we've created and say, oh, wow, this is kind of a jumbled mess. And I think maybe that should be a factor that the NCAA considers. Is do we need to create something that exists to change college football for the sake of college football? Or do we need to change things so that college football is more accessible to folks because the greatest of all time is doing his thing right now, right? Because I point you to the NFL. The NFL has its goat still in the league as well. Tom Brady's still there. Bill Belichick's still there. They don't play, Tom Brady doesn't play for the Patriots anymore, but the NFL didn't make drastic changes to make it harder on Tom to get to the Super Bowl, who went to half the Super Bowls over a two-decade period. They didn't do that. They made changes for the NFL that worked for the NFL. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of come down is, we talked about parity at length yesterday, about how we would like to see more parity in college football. Well, notice what I've never advocated for and what I've said in defense of my arguments, especially in the things that we definitely disagree on, is I don't want to bring Alabama down. I don't want to bring Ohio State down. I don't want to bring Clemson and Oklahoma, and I don't want to bring them down. I want to bring everybody else up, right? I want to allow the opportunity for those teams to come up, because if they're stuck at the bottom, then there's no parity. You need elite. You need elite. You need those storylines. You need the best of the best at that time, because you need to see them struggle. You need to see them conquer. You need a bad guy. You need a villain. You need a good guy. You need a hero. And all of that happens when you have elite players. And the longevity of some of those storylines and those existence, because think about it. With Nick Saban, how many people absolutely loathe Nick Saban, but on the day that he retires, they're going to revere and respect him? How many people that have done what I did with Tom Brady and in the midst of his career said, holy crap, I'm watching the greatest of all time. I don't hate him anymore. I respect him. And I'm going to enjoy watching him until it's done, because I'll never see anything like it again. How many people view it that way? And if the suits in the NCAA don't see it that way and they continue, and once this evolution takes place, apparently, after Mark Emmert steps down, if all these changes are made to make it harder on Alabama, as we have seen with some of the defensive penalties, with the change in the way things are done, the way the playoffs were expanded, all these different types of the transfer portal, a lot of these things done in a way to try to hurt Alabama rather than help college football. If that's the way they keep approaching things, it's not going to be good. It's going to be catastrophic to the sport. The sport will never die. People will always watch it. But the importance of it and there should never be an arrogance about college football that it can't go the way of baseball, boxing, and horse racing. And NASCAR. That it can't lose a massive chunk of its popularity all in one go because of a few too many bad decisions. And you won't blame them on Nick Saban for being too good. You won't blame them on the players for getting what is rightfully theirs. You won't blame it on a transfer portal system that could work if it was just structured correctly. You'd blame it all on the NCAA. I don't think you'd have any other choice but to do that. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with George in Macon. We'll also, we're going to talk about Tua again because his wide receiver actually chose to defend him, which is not something we see in Miami since Tua got there very, very often. That and more here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
We aren't going anywhere. Off the Edge is available in the podcast center on Tide100.9.com.
Is there anything more Friday the 13th than Billy Corgan?
He sounds like Jack from The Night Before Christmas.
Right? A little bit. I mean, Jack, when he sang, had a little more diaphragm in his voice. You know, I love it. I love Smashing Pumpkins. They're going to be on tour and be in the area around October. I don't think that's the kind of show for me. Like, Poppy's going to be there. That's a weird show. But if that's your thing, we got the story. It's on alt1017.com, by the way. Which I'm still magic. I'm on the air in two different places at the moment. I'm on alt1017 right now. I'm also on Tide. I got two boards in front of me. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, his Fitbit is doing extra work. You should see him running back and forth between the studios. I had him put on my Fitbit on Tuesday just to make sure I was getting all my steps in.
There you go. There you go. George, what's going on, buddy? George in Macon. What's going on?
Hey, yeah, Jacob, just a few comments. I would love to see a couple of these NIL contracts. Mm. I mean, I just feel, you know, I'm sure that they're all performance-based and also attendance-based. Just like what little I saw of the guy that signed with Tennessee, you know, for him to get that total $8 million, from what I understand, he's got to be attendance in all 3 years.
Right.
And also, I think some of it's production-based. And my thought is this. I mean, I'm not against anybody making money, but I just find it hard to believe that these guys that are giving these monies to the collectors, I mean, they're rich and they don't make bad decisions. So I can't see, like, Quentin Ewers, you know, he goes to Ohio State and they say they gave him $1 million and he leaves after 3 months.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that when he signed and went into Ohio State, oh, here's your $1 million, and then he leaves. I think that the contracts have got to be performance-based and attendance-based.
I think the contracts have got to be however they write them up. If they're going to make a dumb call and just give $1.5 million to Quinn Ewers, you know, at 18 years old, like, that's kind of on you. Like, you know, it's their money to do what they want to do with it. And for Quinn to fleece the system the way he did, I don't know if he got all of that $1.5 million. But if he did, that's on the problem with the guy giving the money.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that next year and the year after year, and, you know, I think that the people that are donating this money are going to be smarter than they aren't now in writing their contracts.
No doubt.
And like Bryce Young, you know, you're right. He could, after this past year, say, okay, I've had enough, I'm going to train. Well, he also realizes that if he does go to school, the people that are giving him that money and the people who put in the collectors are big fans of that school. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine you know, he's got his $1.5 million, whatever. But to get to that $3.6 million or whatever you said it was, playing another year and whetting the appetite of all the fans that give money, you know, is just going to get him more. That I don't see that if he were not to play this coming year, that there would be more NIL money coming to him from Alabama. Now, it may be coming from some pro team, but the more he plays, especially at Alabama and or a school that is just rabid football fans, the more he plays and the better he is, the more money he's going to make one year after the next.
True.
And, you know, that's kind of my comment. One quick question, you know, Tua. I don't really understand why the fans or the press get on to him, because his first year he was injured. Last year was a pretty decent year, really. I mean, was he the best quarterback in the pros? No. But as far as a sophomore year in the pros, it was a pretty good year. He won some games and had pretty good statistics. So I don't really understand why they're just waiting on him to fail, or every step he takes, they're throwing, you know, tacks in front of him to step on him and to not do well. I thought he had a pretty good year last year.
I would say that if you miss some time and your backup quarterback doesn't win any games and your team still has a winning record after that, I'd say you're pretty good, especially when you're behind one of, if not the worst offensive lines in all of the NFL, and all of your skill players are on rookie contracts or have been injured or whatever. I think he's been fine.
He had one receiver, and that was Waddle.
Yeah, and yeah, because Devontae Parker, who's going to be Mac Jones's number one option, Mac's going to see, like, that dude just doesn't stay on the field. Like, that's none. That's his problem. And
so, Jacob, why are they so negative on him? I don't understand it.
Well, I was looking at some videos the other day on that, because it was that all of this noise only came because of one video of one pass where it didn't look good. It was slowed down. It was a bad angle. Tyreek had to completely stop to catch it. And just everybody on social media said, there's our chance. There's where we can stab Tua and show how bad he is. Now, yesterday, afternoon, Tyreek Hill showed four or five passes of Tua, showing off that new velocity, hitting him in stride on deep passes, all that other sort of stuff. I think some of it has to do with Alabama fatigue. I think another portion of it is the injury, the fact that he was supposed to be, like Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud are now, he was supposed to be the number one overall pick heading into his draft, the tank for Tua stuff, and he ended up getting hurt his rookie season, all the chaos of Fitzpatrick, the fact that his coach didn't like him, the fact that, you know, Fitzpatrick was practically crying after he got benched, the decisions by Brian Flores to pull him as he was in positions to win games or close out games. Like, it's just a myriad of things that just kind of continue to pile up on Tua, and anybody that went in with a negative opinion of him at first has been given reason after reason after reason to continue to hate him.
Well, you know, there aren't many, except for the guy that came from Oregon, that had a fantastic first or second or third year. First or second year. I mean, you look at, Peyton Manning. I mean, he was horrible his first couple of years. And a lot of it had, you know, as Nick Saban says, it's really the sum of the parts of how successful you're going to be. You got to be blocked. Got to have somebody block for you. You got to have somebody run the ball for you. You got to have somebody catch the ball.
Well,
So the sum of the parts are not that good with Miami.
No, and I definitely agree with that. And the fact that they've had winning records it speaks to Brian Flores. It also speaks to Tua. Weird that Brian Flores was fired, but if those two couldn't get along, I mean, you got to choose one of them. But I would also argue on the Peyton Manning thing, though. I mean, that was almost 30 years ago. The NFL is completely different.
Yeah.
If Tua or anybody, if Kenny Pickett, my quarterback, if Kenny Pickett goes out and throws 28 interceptions like Peyton Manning did in 1998, right, he will never see the field ever again. he'll be gone. You know, that's the way the NFL works now. It will not It will not tolerate that. And ever since kind of the success of Matt Ryan and his rookie season, we saw some success out of Matthew Stafford, and Joe Flacco was successful as a rookie, and now we've gotten to the point where you've got the likes of Deshaun Watson, who did what he did, Lamar Jackson did what he did, so many guys where you expect that immediate success. I will say, though, like, if we're going to give Tua all this crap, I think, you know, at some point, don't be surprised if midseason you start seeing some of that get slung Trevor Lawrence's way. And if not, then there's a serious problem there where you have to have a conversation of, well, why is Tua being hated and why isn't Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson or any of the five quarterbacks that were drafted last year, why aren't they getting that same kind of hate?
Well, you know, the thing about it, that's the bad thing about it. If you're a top 10 pick and you're a quarterback, it's a curse because you don't have anybody helping you. It's all on you, and you get killed. I mean,
you can, or you could be Joe Burrow and take that team to the Super Bowl in 2 years. You know, because that's what those teams are hoping on.
Well, also, I really think that because of all the first-round draft choices that Cincinnati had, they had a semi-decent team around him. Now, don't get me wrong. Joe Burrow is fantastic, just like Matt Jones. He just happened to fall. He fell into a place where they got good coaching, and they got a solid team around him, and don't ask him to do things that he can't do. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just the team, the coaching around him are just superior to then say, Trevor Lawrence. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he took a beating.
No doubt about it. I appreciate it, George. I got to run, buddy.
Okay, have a good day, and thanks for taking my call.
Of course, every time. Love it when George calls in. Always good insight, always good thoughts. Lawrence was thrown into a proverbial bleep storm. There was no way to be successful with that. Even if you took Urban Meyer out of it, it's still just it's damn near impossible. And Tua's situation has been very much the same. That offensive line has been horrendous. The defense, up and down. Wide receivers, often injured. Running game, none to speak of. That team has made strides in the front office this season that make me believe not only will they have another winning record with Tua as its quarterback, but it'll make the playoffs in a tough division. And here's the thing. A lot of folks want to get on Tua about his arm strength. I discussed this the other day when that video came out. It's Tua doesn't struggle with throwing the ball deep. Never has. One of his best throws in the NFL was dropped, but it was an absolute rocket from the end zone, 60 yards down the field. Jakeem Grant let it go through his hands.
I saw a tweet talking about that throw and missed catch last week that said if Grant had caught that ball, this conversation would be over. We wouldn't really be having this conversation anymore.
I mean, maybe.
It's certainly possible.
But I also have seen Tua duel Patrick Mahomes. I've seen that with my own eyes. A lot of us have.
And Josh Allen, right? Or was he hurt that game? But they beat the Bills.
No.
Beat the Bills, didn't they?
No, the Bills have absolutely crushed Tua every single time. The Bills have one of the best defenses in the league, though. So, I mean, like, but they have either hurt him or Tua has not been out there. Or, like, Tua's rookie season, the final game was against the Bills, and the Bills absolutely slammed him. It was ugly. Which, I mean, stuff happens.
The Bills lost to the Titans this year. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. But look back at Tua's time at Alabama, and what everybody will say is, well, he had the right outs, a great offensive line, a great running game. He had it all. And again, I say to you, well, what good quarterback doesn't have all those things? You think Tom Brady's been the GOAT by throwing to nobodies his whole career? I mean, to a degree, yes. But has he not made superstars out of those guys? Made superstars out of the likes of Wes Welker? Had a season where he had Randy Moss and was unstoppable. So you have a measure of just how great he is. Give Tua that kind of stuff. And you have. You finally have. Let Tua launch the ball deep a couple of times to Tyreek Hill. Have an offensive line. Hopefully Teron Armstead can stay healthy. Connor Williams can be productive. And that offensive line will be better and allow Tua the opportunity to sling the ball deep. They'll see. They'll all see. Y'all have a good weekend. Enjoy your Friday the 13th. I'll see you on Monday. The Jay Barker Show is up next here on Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Sky partly to mostly sunny this afternoon. Just a small chance of a shower through the evening hours. The high today, 86. The low tonight, 64. Tomorrow, partially sunny. Any afternoon showers that form should be few and far between. The high, 85. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 80 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Thank you for listening.